Now, so maybe we can start. Hello, everybody, and welcome. The speaker today, Luisa, we'll talk about a topic that is a matter of highlights at an MPA in Garching, where she is doing a postdoc. Before, Luisa was in London when she did the PhD with Irania Paris and Andrew Ponson, right? Well, this working with them. During that period, she spent some time, 6 months, if I remember correctly, at Fermilab. Then she stayed 1 year more at UCL until moving to Garching. So Luisa, you're welcome. I invite people to open the webcam and raise the hand or ask at every time, not waiting for the last minute. You have 25 minutes. Please.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for the invitation. So today I'll talk to you a bit about some work I've been doing and try to use machine learning and deep learning to understand a bit more about cosmological structure formation. And this is work that I've been doing with Hirania Paris and Andrew Ponson, who were my former supervisors at UCL, and also Brian Nord at Fermilab and Jay and Tiangam at the STFC Institute. Okay, so I like to say I think that machine learning has now actually become quite a traditional tool in many different applications of astrophysics. So this goes from classification of objects in observations to data and model emulation techniques, regression, outlier detection. So it's actually, you know, being used in a very broad range of applications in astrophysics. And what we wanted to do is to see if we could actually use machine learning to enable some knowledge extraction. So can we actually learn about the physics? Can we extract physical insights into a given problem by learning, by understanding how machine learning algorithms work and how they learn? So I've been trying to apply this to the problem of structure formation. And actually, our standard model of cosmology is very successful in describing the evolution of matter in the universe. So the idea is that all the logical structure that we observe today from galaxy surveys originates from tiny perturbations in the density of matter early times. So as these perturbations evolve through gravitational instability, you end up with the nice looking network of logical structure that we observe today. And this is what I'll show you here is a movie of an n-body simulation that evolves matter from early times when the universe is quasi-linear and only has this small density perturbations to the final large scale place, to the final large scale structure of the universe. So you can see how small regions that were slightly overdense in the early universe then end up forming this large scale structure made of nodes where we have dark matter halos and where galaxies form that are interconnected by filaments and then are surrounded by empty cosmic voids. And by playing this movie sort of forward and backwards, you can really appreciate the connection that there is between these initial perturbations and the final large-scale structure. So this is sort of what I've been trying to do in my research, is to try to understand the connection between these initial perturbations and the final properties of the logical structure of the universe. So how do we get halos of a given mass or of a given angular momentum starting from these initial density perturbations? And in particular, what I've been focusing on is the problem of dark matter halo formation. So as I said, this is just a 1D version of the 3D movie that I just showed you. As I said, the initial conditions are very well described by just a Gaussian random field, but you have these small perturbations in the matter density. But as these grow more and more, they form these large overdense regions, which we call dark matter halos. And M-body simulations are really the only fully accurate method that we have to evolve the matter through cosmic time. But the problem is that they're quite hard to physically interpret. It's hard to know what properties of the initial random field lead to certain characteristic properties of your final dark matter halos. And so people have been trying to, alongside numerical simulations, also come up with analytic frameworks that can give you a qualitative understanding of dark matter halo formation. But so what we wanted to do is to see, can we actually come up with an alternative method to analytic frameworks that can give us insights into dark matter halo collapse? And so the approach is to train a machine learning algorithm to learn the mapping between the initial conditions and the final dark matter halos from N-body simulations. And this approach has actually been used in a variety of applications in cosmology nowadays, where you take, you know, your initial conditions or something linearly evolved, and you try to map what the final output of an N-body simulation is using deep learning techniques. But here, what we're really trying to do is not to have a machine learning model that can give you a faster mapping between inputs and outputs, but the aim is really to try to understand more about the physics. So to try to use this deep learning algorithm or this machine learning algorithm to gain some physical insights into how dark matter halos form. Okay, so how do we actually turn the problem of halo formation into a deep learning problem? So as I said, the N-body simulation starts from your initial conditions, which is essentially a realization of a Gaussian random field, which has the expected power spectrum that we know from cosmology. So it starts from this realization of a Gaussian random field at early times, and then just through gravity, it evolves this density field up to the present time. And then from the final outputs of the simulations, you can extract the properties of different objects, the properties of halos in particular. So in this case, we focused on halo mass, just because it's the primary characteristic of halos, but you could similarly apply this approach to different properties of halos or of galaxies. And so the idea is then to construct a 3D convolutional neural network, and it has to be 3D because your initial conditions, your N-body simulations are in 3D. So to construct a 3D convolutional neural network that takes as input your initial conditions density field in a box, and outputs the final halo masses at present time. So how do we do this? Because of course, in a single simulation, there are many, many different halos and many different halo masses. So what we do is that we actually construct this unique initial conditions to halo mass mapping for every particle in the simulation. So essentially, you go in the initial conditions, you take a dark matter particle, and your input to the CNN is some subvolume of the initial condition centered on that dark matter particle. So the CNN will basically see what is the environment around that dark matter particle in some box, in some subvolume of your whole simulation. And then the output will be the mass of the halo to which that particle belongs at redshift zero. So again, in the simulation, you can just track where that particle ends up at redshift zero, you see which halo it belongs to, and then the output for your CNN is the mass of the halo where that particle ends up. So you can do this for many, many different particles across many different simulations. So every time you take the particle in the initial conditions, you take some subbox around that particle, and then your output is the mass of the halo where that particle ends up in. And the idea is that by training the network on many different examples of the initial conditions to halo mass mapping from different realizations of your Gaussian random field and different examples, the model will learn to identify which aspects of your initial density field are relevant to predict the final mass of a halo. if there are any questions, just stop me at any time. Okay, so well, why do we want to use a convolutional neural network in the first place, right? And the idea is that the really nice thing about convolutional neural networks is that you don't need featureization. So typically when you have a machine learning algorithm, they don't perform very well as if you just feed it the raw data. You need to do some pre-processing to try to come up with, you know, what the machine learning community calls features that you then provide as input to the algorithm. And then from those features, it's able to make a prediction. But with CNNs, you don't need to do that. You can actually feed it the raw data, which in our case is the realization of the initial density field from the simulation. And the CNN actually extracts the features itself. So it identifies which features in your raw data are relevant to then make your final predictions. And this is exactly what we want, because we want to learn about what are the features, what are the properties of the initial density field that are relevant to predict final halo mass. Now, the disadvantages of using this type of deep learning algorithm is that deep learning algorithms are so-called black boxes, right? So they have many, many, many parameters. They have complicated nonlinear sequence of convolutions. And so it's hard to actually understand what those features are and trying to interpret what the convolutional neural network learns. So the question is then, how do we actually extract physical knowledge from the deep learning algorithm if it's a black box? So let's look into a little more detail on what this CNN model looks like. I mean, I just want to give you a broad idea of what a CNN, what our model architecture is like. Basically, the most important thing is just to know that you have a feature extraction part, which, as I said, is the crucial part that basically extracts features from your initial inputs, and then a predictive part where it basically assembles these features to then give you the final prediction. And so the idea is that this feature extraction part is done via convolutional layers, where you basically convolve your input with a set of kernels, where each kernel is meant to detect a specific feature. So here, for example, I have 32 kernels that are 3x3x3 matrices. So you'll detect 32 features here and other 64 here and so on. And by stacking more and more of these convolutional layers, you're able to actually extract from low level to higher level features. So from small scale to higher scale global features. And so this hierarchical structure of feature extraction is what makes CNN models very powerful in identifying patterns in your data that are relevant to halo mass. And so really the most important layer in this model is this convolutional layer, which, as I said, is just made of a kernel where the parameters are learned by the model during the training. So this matrix here, this orange matrix. Now, this is a representation in 2D, but remember that we're actually doing this in 3D, right? So this kernel will have a set of free parameters that are optimized while training. And basically, your kernel moves across the input and just computes the dot products with the overlap and region of the input. And then, so the output of this layer will be something like this, a map of that convolution between the kernel and your input. And so by stacking, as I said, these convolutional layers, you get you extract first local features and then more higher level global features. Now, there are many things you need to choose, like how to do exactly this kernel. As you can see here, you can choose to pad your inputs to convolve centered on every pixel. I mean, there are many different choices that you have to make on exactly how to make this convolution, but this is the general idea, and I can go into more detail if you're interested later, but this is just the general idea. You have these kernels that have free parameters that you're optimizing during training that take convolutions and extract features hierarchically. Okay, so...
Sorry, I have a question. Yeah. So the largest in the number of the layers, the largest resolution you can have. So you can perform a kind of multi-resolution analysis, going to smallest case, increasing the number of layers.
Exactly, exactly. So what you just described is called the receptive field in deep learning terms, and it basically tells you what scales you're capturing at each convolutional layer. And so it gives you exactly the scales of your features basically at every convolutional layer. Yeah. Okay, so what does training the CNN actually mean? It's just really minimizing a loss function to find the best set of parameters of these kernels, mainly of these kernels. There are a few other parameters, but mainly of these kernels that minimize your loss function. And if you think about this just in Bayesian terms, the loss function is made of two terms. One is the predictive term that essentially tells you how close are your predicted values to the true values in your training set. So it's telling you about how accurate is your model for a given set of parameters W. And this is the likelihood term, if you like to think about it in a Bayesian term, in a Bayesian sense. This is the likelihood term, and typical choices for the likelihood in the machine learning community are the Gaussian likelihood that gives you the mean squared error, the Laplacian likelihood that gives you the mean absolute error. What we found is actually that the Gaussian assumption didn't work very well for our problem, but that a Cauchy likelihood, so something that has much broader tails than a Gaussian distribution, gave us a much better likelihood just empirically. So our predictive term is essentially the negative log likelihood of a Cauchy distribution. And then you have what is known as the regularization term, which is just essentially setting priors on your weights. And here you can choose different priors depending on exactly what you want your network to do. We choose priors that essentially have two purposes. One is to regularize the network, so to try to reduce overfitting because these models have so many parameters. And the other is to try to compress the model. So we have sparse priors that try to only keep a very limited number of non-zero weights in our model. But anyway, so once you've specified your loss function, you can train your algorithm on all the different examples that you have from the training set. And then the next step is to test your model. So with once you have your trained CNN, you can take a test set, so dark matter particles from independent simulations that the algorithm doesn't know about before, and again provide as input the subbox around that particle, and then ask the CNN to give you a prediction for the final mass of the halo. And so what I'm showing you here is essentially the distribution of predicted halo masses as a function of true halo mass. So these are just bins in true halo masses, and each of these violin plots are the distribution of predicted masses within those bins. And as you can see, I mean, the predictions have quite a large variance, quite a large skew. I mean, the peak of the posterior is more or less in the right position, which is this black line here, but there's quite a large variance and quite a large skew. So the question is, what information is the algorithm learning to return these predictions that have quite a large variance? And so to do this, we developed a quite simple and effective technique to gain interpretability of the deep learning model. So the idea is that you remove part of the information carried by the inputs, you retrain the model, and then you can measure the resulting change in the model's performance. So this can tell you whether that part of information that you removed, it was relevant to make the final predictions for the algorithm. So essentially remove the information, compare the model's performance in the two cases to see whether that part of information was relevant for the algorithm to make the final predictions. So in this case, we wanted to test whether anisotropic information in the initial density field is relevant to make to predict final halo masses. So what we do is that we take our 3D boxes and then compute the average density over shells. So essentially we're removing the anisotropic information in the density field and only leaving the average spherical averaged information. So then you have two sets of inputs. One are, you know, your raw density training set, and one is this average density training set. You train two separate models, and then you can compare what the predictions look like for these two models. And these blue and pink, I guess, histograms here show you the residuals in the predictions in three true mass bins of halos. And what you can see is that more or less these histograms look very similar. If you quantify the similarity using the KL divergence and other quantitative metrics, these predictions look consistent between the two models. And so what this means is that actually the model, the CNN, is not using anisotropic information to predict final halo masses. And so the information that is relevant to predict final halo masses is saturated in the average density around in the local environment of particles. So one crucial assumption in our model is that we are assuming that the CNN can extract features on all scales probed by the input subbox. So we know that we have information on small scales and on large scales, and we want to make sure that our CNN is able to extract features on all scales probed by the box that we provide as input. And so we tested this actually by changing a little bit the input to output mapping in the CNN. In particular, this time, instead of using the initial conditions density field as input, we use the redshift zero density field. And in this case, we know that the algorithm should give us perfect predictions, right? Because the mapping is really simple and is basically that given by the Halo Finder algorithm. So, but this, what this allowed us to test is that the algorithm would be able to extract features on the smallest scale here for very low mass halos and on the largest scale for very large clusters. And what we find is basically perfect predictions, which tells us that we have an architecture that is able to extract features on all scales that we wanted. And just to finish, I'll just highlight a few next steps that we are currently doing. So what we want to, in our previous work, we needed to have a hypothesis, right? So we wanted to test specifically what is the role of anisotropic information in predicting halo mass. So the next step is really trying to come up with an architecture that doesn't require this kind of hypothesis. We really want a network that is able to encode somehow the most relevant aspects for a given prediction without having to think about what those might be in the first place. So this is the network that we're trying to construct now, where you can think of this basically as a data compression problem. So these here are just convolutional layers. So with the convolutional layers, we are trying to compress the information in the initial density field to a low dimensional latent representation. And then from that representation, we then make predictions about halo mass, but it can be other things, halo profiles or whatever. And so the idea is that then once you have a low dimensional 1D representation of this information, it would be much easier to interpret what physically that latent representation corresponds to. And yeah, so this is where we're currently at with this problem, trying to understand what physical information is being compressed by the neural network and how this relates to physical properties of the initial conditions. And I'll just jump to my conclusion. So I hope I've convinced you that machine learning is a powerful tool to also do physics. It's not just a black box that is helpful to do, you know, input to output fast mapping, but can actually provide insights into cosmological structure formation than the physics driving it. And right now we're employing these sort of VAE structures to try to extract in a more agnostic way some physical knowledge about different structure properties, and we are applying it to other cosmic structures such as voids and other halo properties such as halo profiles. So we're excited about this line of direction, and I'll just end here. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Luisa. It's very nice introduction to machine learning. Is there any comment or question? Matt, you raise the hand, please. Open also your welcome if you wish. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi. So really interesting talk. Thanks very much. I enjoyed that. So can you go back to the slide showing the predictions, the real predictions from the machine learning? I guess it was about halfway through.
Yeah, this one's.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So at a really basic level, the some aspects of this plot are pretty much a given, right? In the sense that you're not going to predict a high mass halo unless you have a high density environment, right? So it sort of makes sense. But those are easier to identify. And at that kind of level, you can achieve this by really simple prescriptions with the Gaussian random field, right? So you can essentially take a spherical collapse criterion or whatever, have some threshold for collapse and like that criterion, and then just have a sort of simple halo merger function. So I'm curious if you've tried that and how the results compare by just sort of saying there's some simple, you know, you essentially lose all 3D geometry and it's just, you know, spheres of overdensity.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, we did a huge amount of work actually to compare to analytic frameworks. That was sort of the first steps that we published in previous papers. And we always found that our machine learning model was always agreeing with spherical collapse models. So it was, you know, so that you might think, you know, spherical collapse model is the simplest thing that you can think of. And then ellipsoidal collapse models try to incorporate tunnel shear effects and all of this. But actually it's what we find is that tidal shear features in the initial conditions just don't play a major role in predicting halo mass. And it's important to realize that it's halo mass, right? I mean, this doesn't mean that for other things, like obviously the angular momentum or other properties will be affected by different properties of your initial peaks. But when you're talking about halo mass, actually adopting, introducing information about the tidal shear, or in this case, we showed any anisotropic information, really doesn't add much. And so halo mass is really just incorporated in the spherical information in the initial conditions, yes.
So this is along the lines of the interpretation that you mentioned, right? Because then we've learned something about how structures form. But so from a practical standpoint, would you advocate using something like this to, you know, to sort of speed up or bypass in-body simulations, or just the spherical collapse criterion? I mean, I guess most of the time these days we can afford to do in-body anyway. But
that's
curious.
The thing, right? I mean, if you're interested in something fast, then you might as well use some second order perturbation theory or, you know, some approximate simulation to give you something fast. I don't think, I mean, there is other groups that do this, right? I mean, there is still value in doing this. Is, for example, you can train from low res simulation to predict things about high res simulation. Like, it's a huge field in itself. This particular work and the way it's constructed is really helpful for understanding the physics. I wouldn't say, well, I would use this instead of n-body simulations, right? I mean, the scatter is huge, so it wouldn't be that helpful. Just like,
well, it's,
we
more
know,
like, yeah, I mean, clearly on that criterion it's not ready, but I take your point, right?
Yeah, just like no one would really use spherical collapse models to do precision cosmology. It's sort of the same idea, but this is more focused on understanding the physics, I guess, that is set, that has a separate value, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Lisa, there's a question on the chat by Emmanuel Nesri, who's it's a bad connection. He asks, can we say that such code is or will be able to identify the Lagrangian volumes of halos or structures only by reading the density field or the mass distribution of the initial conditions?
The question is basically, can we identify halo structures in the initial conditions from? Yes, you can definitely do that.
The Lagrangian volumes.
Yeah, you can do that. again, the way you set up the machine learning framework really depends on the question that you're asking. So if I wanted to identify the Lagrangian volume or of the halo in the initial conditions with machine learning, I wouldn't use this particular CNN. I would use something that can give you back a map of the same dimensions, right? You want to identify the Lagrangian volume, so you could transform your initial density field into a map where every pixel tells you something about the Lagrangian volume. So you can definitely do that, and there are papers that do this already, actually, like a halo finder in the initial conditions. But you wouldn't set it up in this way, right? The architecture would have to be adapted to that problem, but you certainly can do that, yeah.
Please, Manu, write in the chat if the answer is sufficient or not. No reaction, so I suppose it's sufficient. Is there any comment or question? Let's see, I have a curiosity in the meantime. Yes. Thank you. I didn't understand how this technique is a plus compared to standard n-body codes, because you also test the effect of an isotropic mass distribution with standard n-body code.
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, how, right? Like, with an n-body code, you have a realization and then you have the final output. Now, understanding exactly what part of those initial conditions lead to the to a given halo mass is not trivial. I mean, there are obviously many, many papers on this, trying to look at halo populations, fixing halo mass, and then trying to find correlations in the initial conditions. But this is something that is not easy to do from numerical simulations alone. So I would say that the closest to this work is more on the analytic frameworks, right? Where they try to do it's a similar idea, right? Compress your information in the initial conditions into some physical properties and see what you can say about final halo mass. So it's a non-trivial problem from n-body simulations because you have the full information there. So if you don't compress it in some way, it's really hard to distinguish between properties that are just correlated and those that are related by causation.
I'm looking at the chat, your answer triggered some reaction. No. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I have a curiosity. You work on dark matter only simulations. Is your algorithm, can your algorithm be extended to hydrodynamical simulation with more in an easy way?
Yeah.
Do you expect any which is the strong difficulty that you have to add?
So on a technical level, there is actually no difference. The framework is fully generalizable to hydro simulations. The problem would be more on the simulation side, right? I mean, with dark matter only, you can, you know, say, okay, this is the truth, right? That there is no problem. With the hydro simulations, the algorithm will only learn what you train it on, right? So then in terms of interpreting that with respect to physics, there would be additional issues in picking the right training set and being sure that you might not be biased in to certain choices.
So the difficulties can come from the uncertainty in the modeling of the hydro part.
Exactly, yeah. But the framework is fully generalizable to any property. It doesn't matter if it's, yeah, hydro or DM only.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take your code to run?
It would take like 5 or 6 hours for the training.
Mm-hmm.
And then the testing is super fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other comment or question? Nico, please.
Yes, hi. I had a question on your variational autoencoder. I had a question about your variational autoencoder.
Yeah.
In one of your last slides, I was wondering what you try to reproduce on the right. Is it still a 1D quantity like the mass of the halos, or can you use this to directly produce your n-body simulation of the halo?
Yes, the first answer is yes. It's just a 1D problem. I'm actually doing more specifically the profile, the mass profile. So it would be halo mass at different locations in radius in the halo. Would we be definitely, you could definitely be able to, you know, by substituting this with another set of deconvolutions, you could definitely reconstruct something on the right that doesn't have to be 1D. Yes. So
what I was thinking is, if on the left, instead of the initial condition, you put the output and body simulations that you had run with the initial condition, your latent representation will then be your initial conditions that you can sample in your variational autoencoder. And you put your left part on the reverse side on the right to reproduce the n-body simulation while sampling your latent representation of the initial conditions.
Wait, but what do you mean? On the right, would you put the initial conditions or the redshift zero density phion?
No, I was thinking of the architecture, to put the exact same architecture on the right.
Right, but then your output being the redshift zero output of the simulation instead of the initial conditions. That's what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. That is certainly a good... Okay, again, it depends what your question is, right? For us, it's we want to encode a latent representation that can give us halo profiles or halo mass. So there is no need to reconstruct the whole redshift zero field, right? Because we're interested in the 1D property. If you were interested in reconstructing the full thing, then you could definitely do that. And there are papers that do that. They use units, basically. They don't even use variational autoencoders to predict from the initial density voxel basically the redshift zero density at the same voxel. So that kind of technique is, for example, used to go faster to try to replace the simulation with some sort of emulator or, so that's definitely something. But again, it depends what you're interested in, right? Like mm-hmm. We wanted to know about the one property. So for us, it made sense, this architecture, but you could definitely replace this right hand side with deconvolutions and then have some output that is 3D. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I don't see any other comment or question. So in this case, thank you again, Luisa, for your talk. Your answers. Just an announcement for the next week, Cafe Club. Next week we will have. Sorry, lost my information. Here we are. Olivier Newton from Lyon talking about the Hermitian dark matter halos of the local group. And that's it. Thank you very much.